Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. You're on WBCX-FM, the voice of Brunel. 89.1 FM on your dial. The Communication Corner is broadcasted at 9 a.m. on Tuesday mornings and then rebroadcasted at 6 a.m. on Thursday mornings. And for those of you who happen to miss those broadcasts, you can also catch the program, the podcast of the program, on my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. Great to have you with us today. We have a very exciting guest, Ricky Steele. I'll introduce Ricky soon. Starting, though, I want to say hi to Christina Rhodes, general manager of the station, program producer. I call her my co-host. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, and I'm still thinking about the great time that you and I had when we went to Sardis Elementary School last Thursday. Tell our listeners what went on there, please.
Well, your wife, Sandra, is a teacher in the area, a local teacher, and she teaches a number of grades. Is that correct?
Yes, she's a substitute teacher. She has been a full-time teacher for over two decades, and now she's a substitute teacher. Has been all of this term at Sardis Elementary, right?
Well, she invited myself and my companion dog, Chevy, to come speak to a group of second and fourth graders that she works with. And so you and I went up there, and you introduced me to the gang and a great group of kids, and I was able to speak with them for about an hour and introduce them, like I said, to my companion dog, Chevy, and talk a little bit about what it is to be a working dog and the rules around working dogs and the different kinds of dogs that are out there assisting people. And again, just a great group of kids. We had a blast, and man, did they love Chevy.
Oh, they loved you as well. Chevy, they just flocked to Chevy. They
talk about a dog pile. I mean, there was, I think at one point, about 15 kids on him, hugging him, and man, he was in heaven.
Right. And one of the things that was so significant was that for the last several weeks, they had been studying companion dogs, and they had all these posters, and one of the kids, you remember, made a presentation. So that was a wonderful event. And I know that you enjoy opportunities to speak to school children. Also, you enjoy speaking at conferences and conventions and sharing your highly motivational story.
I do. I really enjoy that, Bill. The opportunity to speak to people, it's something I feel very fortunate to be able to do.
Well, and I want people to go to my blog and see the brief video of you that we recorded in front of the school afterward. My blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. Great experience. I'm sure we'll have many more together where you'll be making presentations and bringing inspiration and information to people. Well, switching to today's topic, networking, let's start today's focus on that topic by thinking about the networking habits that most professional people have had for quite a while. For example, let's consider an ambitious professional that we'll call Jeff. Jeff wants to get ahead in his business, so Jeff makes sure that he attends every networking opportunity in his area. Let's picture Jeff on the afternoon of a Chamber of Commerce reception. Before he leaves his office, he stuffs his pocket with dozens of business cards. Jeff has set a personal goal to give his business card to at least 25 people who attend the event. And when he does that, he will describe to each one of them his qualifications that make him the vendor of choice in his industry. Now, at the end of the evening, Jeff has given away his 25 cards, and he's made his brief pitch to that many people. Also, he has gotten the business card from each one of these potential clients. Okay, fast forward to the next day. Jeff calls everybody he met at the reception and starts his call with something like, "Hey, I'm Jeff, you're a member. We met at the salad bar last night, and I told you about why I'm the best carpet cleaner in this area." Well, there's a pause, and Jeff continues, "What? You don't remember meeting me? Well, I'm going to send you a packet of information. And meanwhile, get your calendar out now, please, and let's talk about our first appointment." Okay, listeners, how would you respond to Jeff's networking effort? Probably not too well. It's so obsolete. There has to be a better way. Fortunately, there is, and our guest in today's edition of the Communication Corner has designed a networking long-range strategy that really works. It's contemporary, it's creative, and it attracts people rather than repelling them. How does he know that? Well, he has used it himself for 30 years with amazing results. So for the next 60 minutes, put aside your current networking ideas. Open yourself to a fresh, vital strategy that has attracted many clients and supporters for our guest, Ricky Steele. Please join me now in welcoming network guru, and he really does deserve that description, I promise you, Ricky Steele, based in Marietta, Georgia. Good morning, Ricky.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Well, delighted. Appreciate your taking the drive over from Marietta this morning. You're one of those people that I've read about, heard talked about for years, and this is the first time I've had the opportunity to meet you. It's a real privilege to introduce you to many of our listeners as well. One place I would like to start, as much as I know about your story, it seems to me the logical starting place is to talk about the influence that your father had on the networking skills that you eventually developed. Describe that to us, please, Ricky.
Certainly, Bill. My dad was bigger than life, and he started off after he got out of the military at Fort Benning down in Columbus, Georgia. He was born in Atlanta, as I was, and he started off very, very modestly. I understand that he made about $200 a month, and many of his friends would tell me that if they wanted to read the local Ledger Inquirer, wait till my dad came by and crossed his legs because it was underneath his shoes and it was very visible. But he made a career of trying to help other people, and really he led a giving life. And as a result, he built a substantial business over the days. I'll never forget his funeral when the pastor was talking about Dad, and he said, "I met Dick Steele about 30 years ago, and I've gotten to know him well over the years." And he said, "He's one of the few people I've ever met that lived a life with his hands wide open. I never saw him where he had a clenched fist." And of course, Gandhi said it is impossible to shake hands with a clenched fist. And my dad lived that kind of open life. He would talk to anybody that would talk to him. He was just as comfortable with the mayor as he was with a parking lot attendant or a gas station attendant or whatever, because I think he considered them all equal, which certainly I do as well. Watching that over a lifetime, or at least till I was 21 or 22, I think formed kind of the basis of what I wanted to do the rest of my life.
I like the illustration about the open hands. You talked about all the people that he related to. One of the things that you've said about him is that he didn't just wave at people or nod to them. He made a point of shaking hands with everybody, regardless of their occupation, their class, their race. As you say, they were all of the same status to him, and so he acknowledged them all by shaking hands with everybody.
That's true.
Something else that you picked up from him was dedication to the community.
Yes, I watched my dad from very early years be involved in several civic organizations in the church. He coached me in football growing up, was involved in the United Way, and that kind of stuck with me. I saw that it really is important to be part of the fabric of the community. Muhammad Ali said that service is the rent you pay for your space on earth. And that kind of sticks with me. And, I've been able to contribute a little bit over the years and actually started in high school in junior JCs. So I kind of had a long stint at trying to emulate my dad in that regard.
One of the things that impressed me so much was many of us, when we get into a new community, we don't really start our networking, building contacts, until we've been there a while. We say, well, you know, I've got to get my office straight. I've got to figure out what I'm doing. I've got to know who the leaders are in the community. I was so amazed to read that your first day virtually in Atlanta, you met somebody named George Berry. You didn't know him. Tell us who he was, how you met him, what resulted from that introduction.
Certainly. In about 1977, 78, I started a two-car limousine service in Columbus, Georgia. I don't know how much you know about Columbus, but it will not be one of the next great limousine capitals of the world. And after about a year, we were completely broke and looking to close. I moved to Atlanta and figured that I could either find somebody to buy the business or I could figure out a way to find a job and go bankrupt, because Columbus is a big little city and, you know, I knew a lot of folks and I didn't want to do it in my hometown. The first day that I arrived, I had to go to the airport and apply for permits to be able to come in and out of the airport. I applied for the permits, paid them a check for $100, which may or may not have been good at the time. And as on the way out, I saw a sign or a placard that said, Mr. George Berry, Commissioner of Aviation. And I thought, heck, he's up there towards the top. I ought to try to say hello to him. So I asked his secretary. I said, I'd like to meet Mr. Berry. And she said, do you have an appointment? I said, no, ma'am, but, you know, I just heard a lot about him and would just love to have the opportunity of just saying hello. About that time, Mr. Berry was coming out of the door, and he said, I'm George Berry, and I said, I'm Ricky Steele. And he said, well, come on in for a minute, and sat down at his desk, and we chatted for a little bit about the limousine business, but he knew some folks in Columbus, and we had a great time for 2 or 3 minutes, which seemed like eternity to me. I was so excited about being in there. We exchanged cards and promised to get back together. Well, we did get back together for many, many years until Mr. Berry became George, and actually when he was head of the Industry, Trade, and Tourism, he hired me to produce the state visitor's guide called Georgia on My Mind, and when he ran for lieutenant governor, I was able to help him raise, you know, a few dollars to go towards his campaign. Mr. Berry's retired now, and I probably don't think he hired very many folks in the Atlanta area.
There are a couple of lessons there. One of them is, so often we're reluctant, and what amazes me about yourself, your description of yourself, which I find difficult, you're going to have to explain it somehow during the program or afterward, you refer to yourself as basically shy. Okay, let's say somebody is basically shy. They know these people they would like to meet, but they just don't get up the courage to do it. What might they be missing? You have illustrated very well what you might be missing. It also says to us, you never know what can come from any relationship. Sometimes we look at the people who, as you say, are already at the top and we think, oh, they won't give me the time of day. Guess what? That's probably how many of them got to the top, because they would give the time of day to anybody who is interested. Do you agree with those concepts?
Well, certainly. When I say I'm shy, everybody laughs because I'm, you know, pretty outgoing guy in the community. But growing up, and even the first few years of my career, and even today, going in a social situation where I'm not that comfortable or don't really know anybody, I'm kind of a wallflower for a while and kind of get the feel of the room and pray that I'm going to see somebody I know, immediately go to them, and then hope they attract a crowd. In business, it's a little bit different, and having read and studied most of the Atlanta business community, I can usually find somebody to chat with all of a sudden. I did find out very early in my career that in America, it is not against the law to introduce yourself to someone. There is no capital punishment for that particular crime. And so as I built a little strength and energy over the years and maybe some confidence, I've gotten a little bit more aggressive at doing it. And again, it's a situation where you try to meet someone for a very brief conversation. You know, you're never going to become someone's dearest best friend, you know, the first time you meet them. Great relationships are like great courtships. They take time to mature. And so I'm very cognizant of the other person's time. And generally, if I can get 2 minutes, a minute and a half, and end up by saying, you know, I'd love to spend some more time with you. Would it be okay if I called your assistant tomorrow and set up something, you know, in the future? Come by for 10, 15 minutes tops. And at the end of 15 minutes, I promise you, I'll walk out of your office. It's hard to refuse that. And in the times that I've been able to be successful at doing that, which has been quite often, at 15 minutes, I say, you know, it's been great being with you. Thank you very much for your time. 9 out of 10 times they say, oh, I'm enjoying this. Sit back down. I've had assistants come in at 30 and 45 minutes saying, you know, Mr. Whoever, Ms. Whoever, you got three people outside. You've missing. You're late on three appointments. And he said, that's okay. You know, I'm enjoying talking to this young guy. And, you know, we stay for another 15 minutes.
But the important point here is that you definitely honored your pledge. You said, it's 15 minutes. My time is up. You offered.
No question about it. You know, if you make an offer, you have to live up to it. And if you don't, then you'll never be trusted again.
Christina, some of our people may have tuned in late, so please remind us where we are and who our guest is today, please.
Listeners, you're tuned in to the Communication Corner here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau. And today we're getting truly innovative networking advice from Ricky Steele of Marietta, Georgia. As you've noticed, he's not just rehashing what you might have heard from other networking sources. Why? Because Ricky Steele is widely acclaimed as a networking expert who has learned his networking strategies through his own promotional efforts, not just from other authorities. Fortunately, he's willing to share his recommendations with us today, so we will avoid old habits that took a lot of energy but didn't bring business results. More positively, we'll start networking much more productively. And here's a reminder, later today, Bill will post the podcast of this interview on his blog, along with the photo of Ricky and Bill together. Additionally, Bill will give his blog readers Ricky Steele's contact information, which our listeners will be eager to have, I'm sure. The web address for Bill's blog, thecompletecommunicator.com.
Getting back, Ricky, to something you were saying a minute ago, which is so key and it's so different from the type of networking that I described at the start, where somebody thinks they have to accomplish it all at one business after hours reception and literally tackle people there. You talk about building relationships. In your writings, you say something about the time-honored formula for sales, ABC formula, always be closing. You disagree with that. Why?
Always be closing makes you a vendor. I believe always be caring opens the door to having a real relationship. And, you know, having a real relationship really is a game changer. People like to do business with people they enjoy, that they like to be around.
And they trust.
No question about it. People that are around a vendor, they consider it a commodity, and they may get an order from now and time to time, but they're never going to have that intimate relationship where you call and exchange greetings for no reason other than to hear the other person's voice. I've had people call me from their boat on Saturday afternoon thanking me for the cigars I gave them on Wednesday. That's a pretty, you know, intimate relationship, and if you create that, You'll never understand how successful your career will become.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Many networkers might consider volunteering a waste of time because they say, well, heck, I'm volunteering for this organization. I'm not getting paid for that. There's no return for me. What has been your experience, Ricky, with volunteering and the return that you get on it? In many ways. Talk to us a little bit about your volunteer efforts. I know there's the Atlanta Food Bank, there are other organizations. What's the value of volunteering for a networker?
Well, Bill, if it wasn't for volunteering, after I got my business off the ground here in Atlanta, if I'd not volunteered, I'd be back in Columbus, Georgia, pumping gas at a Phillips 66 station. Not that pumping gas at a Phillips 66 station has anything wrong with it.
But that's not what you want to do.
That wasn't my, you know, goal in life. Although I worked at a gasoline station in high school, so I pumped a lot of gas. But early on, I was told by a number of people that the way to get to know the hospitality community was joining the Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau. So I went one day and met a guy by the name of Mr. W.B. Baldwin, who's just a great, great individual. I gave him a check for $365, which I know wasn't good at the time. And it just happened to be there was a membership meeting that particular day. I attended, and there was an opportunity to volunteer. You know, I wasn't that busy since I was, brand new in town. So I volunteered for what I understood was the worst committee, and that was the membership committee.
Because you had to go out and sell memberships, which cost people something. You had to persuade them of the value of it.
Certainly. It was tough enough selling my own product. Having to sell the Bureau when I'd been in Atlanta, 3 weeks or a month, was going to be a tough situation.
You had no contacts. You had no credibility.
Certainly zero. The best thing was they had free coffee. And from time to time, they'd buy me lunch, which, that was a great opportunity. I felt like everyone that I called on was a potential job if my business failed, or was at least someone that I may could do business with or become a referral source in years to come. My first year, I was very fortunate and sold more memberships to the Bureau than 5 of the 6 full-time salespeople.
You say you were fortunate. You and I both know that definition of luck. Luck is where preparation meets opportunity, and we've both heard the harder I work, the luckier I get. That's why you were fortunate.
Well, I always believe God looks after those who can't look after themselves, and I'm big in that category. But the interesting thing was, at the end of the year, I had a fellow who was the general manager of the Southeast for Eastern Airlines. Young folks listening to this have no idea what Eastern Airlines is or was.
That's history.
That is long history. But anyway, he was the chairman of the membership committee as his volunteer job. And he calls me up one day and says, "Ricky, I'd like to meet with you in my office." I thought, well, what have I done wrong? This is not good. And I go out to Mr. Cambry, Bill Cambry's office, and it was right on Acres Mill in Atlanta where the new Cobb Energy Center is. Went into his office, and he says, "Sit down." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Ricky, I've been watching you the last year, and you've really gone above and beyond." I said, "Well, thank you, Mr. Cambry." He said, "I'd like to mentor you." I said, "Mr. Cambry, I'd like to name my next children after you." It was another game changer for me. Mr. Cambry began mentoring me, and over a period of time, he actually had me put on the board of the Convention and Visitors Bureau. I'd been town in, less than 2 years, and there were companies doing my same sort of business that had been in town 15, 20 years. I understand a number of them were upset that I was on the board at that young age. Fortunately, I continued to contribute, and before I knew it, I was on trips to sell Atlanta as a convention destination to London, Washington, Chicago, and New York, where I would coordinate the transportation and actually do the invocation at every one of these meetings with 300 to 500 meeting planners.
Pretty good for a guy who'd once pumped gas in Columbus.
Well, hopefully it was an improvement a little bit. One of the interesting parts was on our trip every time, there were a number of dignitaries. Sam Williams, who ran the Portman Companies and now is the president of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce. Andrew Young, who was our mayor at the time and former United States ambassador. Shirley Franklin, who was Angie's assistant and later mayor, great mayor of Atlanta. Zell Miller, who was lieutenant governor at the time, and the list goes on and on. I know when they saw me on the trip, they assumed that I'd been brought to carry the baggage, and I'd have been tickled to death to have done that. But it opened some doors, created some relationships that have lasted me, the last 30 years.
And one way, if you really want to get to know somebody, travel with them and get them to know you, travel with them. That's you're all a captive audience there for a long time.
No question. And still servant, being a servant is such a great privilege. I remember being at the, I believe it was the Shoreham or the Sheraton Hotel in Washington, D.C., with a group, and Andrew Young was going to, of course, be our keynote speaker, and we got word that Dr. Martin Luther King Sr., Daddy King, had passed away that morning, and Andy had to get back immediately to be with the family. I was able to change the transportation arrangements in very short notice and get him to a private airstrip to make it back. And, little things like that, go a long way with folks. And I truly believe in life. It's not the one big thing you do. It's the million little things. And I think you create a relationship with Andy. And I think I've got a photo of us in the book together,
yes.
In my book together.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's a guy that I just respect. He's just a great individual. And without the volunteerism at the Bureau, the only thing I would know of Andrew Young was pictures I'd seen in different publications.
talking about your philosophy of life, which we've really sort of gotten into, you'd say that one day, and we hope no time soon, but one day on your tombstone and mine, there will be a mention of the starting date of our life. There will be a mention of the ending date of our life, and there's a dash in between. You have some words to say. What is it you say about what we should do with that dash?
Well, all of us are going to have a beginning and an end. It's just inevitable. It's that dash in the middle, what you do with your life, that is how you're judged, and how people remember you and what you accomplish during life. And I think the greatest accomplishments are how you change the lives of others and how you helped others be successful, how you took care of your faith, your family, and the friendships that you had. You know, if almighty dollar is your goal in life, you will never achieve that because there's always more and more and more. I've seen the bumper sticker on cars that say something close to, he who dies with the most toys wins. You know, friends, he who dies with the most toys is dead, period, end of the story. And more than likely, the size of the crowd at their funeral is determined by the weather because they have not a great deal of friends, and they've missed relationships with friends, with their family, and perhaps with their faith that really, you know, they lost in the process. So that dash in the middle is how people will, you know, remember you.
One of your strongest statements is, when my motivation is to serve, I always win. Explain that for us, please.
In the book, there's a story when I was 13 or 14 years old where, due to some circumstances, I felt like my call in life was to be a servant. Regardless of what my business title might be or what job I might be doing, but I really had a passion to serve others. And for the last 40-odd years, maybe close to 50, probably 45 at this point, I've tried to do that to the best of my ability. You know, service is something that that not only everybody needs, but everybody desires. And many, many people would prefer to be served than to serve. I've just found every time I serve others and every time I am a true servant leader, then that leadership becomes recognized by others. And I might not win a piece of business, but I win respect. Respect creates relationships, and relationships either create an opportunity for business later on or an opportunity for referrals or just a great friendship. And some of the folks I have met from serving have changed my life. And Bill Bowling, for example, is the head of the Atlanta Community Food Bank. I met Bill in 1986, started getting to know him in 1987, and now 25 years later, I consider him one of my closest friends. He's a saint in the city, and I just respect Bill and am just tickled that we have a relationship. Again, it was a volunteerism service type opportunity that opened that door.
I like what you said, that you really give without expecting anything in return. One of the problems with some people who try giving, they do a favor for somebody. And then, as you've said, maybe 3 weeks later, the person who did the favor wants a favor. They call the person they did the favor for. It's not the right time. The other person has some kind of obligations or some kind of worries. He can't do anything back for you at that time. And the person who did the favor thinks, well, gosh, I just wasted my time. But it's not just a quid pro quo, is it? It's not a 100% I give now and I get something in the next 3 weeks.
In my early career, I probably made that mistake, you know, more often than not. Somebody would need free limousine, somebody would need some consulting, someone would need something, and I would give it because I felt like I had a servant mentality. Well, 3 weeks later or a month later, I needed something that I know they could give. And either for timing or whatever circumstances, they weren't able to do it at that point. And I would gently remind them that, you know, what I did for them was worth thousands. What I'm asking them to do are worth hundreds. Many, many times they did it. But it was the end of the relationship. When you give a gift expecting something in return, it is not a gift. It's called a bribe. Nobody likes to be bribed. So you give expecting nothing in return. And what you find more often than not is that it'll be returned 100-fold.
It's one of the wonderful laws of the universe.
No question. It truly is.
Christina, remind us, please, where we are. Gosh, the time is just zipping by. We can't believe we're halfway through our interview with the terrific Ricky Steele.
Fantastic advice this morning already, Bill. Today, listeners, first, you're tuned into the Communication Corner here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau University. And today you're hearing from innovative networking advice from Ricky Steele of Marietta, Georgia. And as you may have noticed, he's not just rehashing what other experts say about networking. Why? Because Ricky Steele has widely acclaimed as a networking expert who has learned his networking strategies through his own promotional efforts, not just from other authorities. And you can tell that by the personal stories that have been illustrated today. Fortunately, he's willing to share these recommendations with us, so we will avoid old habits that took a lot of energy but didn't bring business results. More positively, we'll start networking much more productively. As a reminder, later today, Bill will post the podcast of this interview on his blog, along with a photo of Ricky and Bill together. And additionally, Bill will give his blog readers Ricky Steele's contact information, which I'm sure they're eager to receive. The web address for Bill's blog is thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, that is thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, you're tuned in to WBCX, and we're going to take just a quick break.
To contact WBCX, you can call 770-538-4744, or you can visit us on the web via Facebook, Twitter, and our website at brenau.edu/WBCX.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil, and Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child, and that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org, brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on the Voice of Brenau.
Brenau University invites you to join us May 20th and 21st for the 3rd annual Brenau Barbecue Championship to benefit the local student scholarship fund. Come and see 20 professional cook teams from 6 states, 40 local teams affectionately known as the Backyard Braggarts, and up to 30 vendors flying summertime eats and goods. In addition, there will be lots of fun activities for kids. Call 770-534-6161 for more information.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors and their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
Extraordinary lives from Brenau University.
I had everything going for me. A husband, a child, and a job I loved. And then things just fell apart. I got divorced, and suddenly my job as a teacher's assistant could no longer pay the bills. It was a terrible blow. But I didn't feel self-pity. Only this overwhelming sense that this was my life, and I wanted to make it the best life I could, for me and my son. So I went back to school and enrolled in Brenau University. At Brenau, I found classrooms full of people just like me, motivated adults who wanted to better their careers and their lives. In 1 year, I'll be a licensed school teacher with my own first grade classroom. Life can knock you down, but you can change that life. At Brenau University, you can make your life extraordinary.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online. Register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University. Extraordinary lives.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being, empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau.
Welcome to the second half of the Communication Corner on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brenau. Broadcasted Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m., rebroadcasted at 6 a.m. on Thursday mornings, and you can find every program's podcast, every interview that we've had on here for the last 11 months. You can find them on my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. This is your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, talking with Ricky Steele from Marietta, Georgia, a renowned networker. Ricky, it's been so interesting and so beneficial so far. Let me pose this question. Let's say that you know two people. You know somebody named Betty. You know somebody named Martin. You respect both of them. They've both achieved a lot. You feel that it would be helpful to introduce them to each other. How and why do you do that? What results from it, too?
Well, it's, again, part of the giving servant mentality. If you know two people and you know them well, and you see some opportunity for them to help one another, perhaps whether it's a business opportunity or they're involved in the same charity or maybe they even have the same a college they attended, and yet they just don't know each other. Putting them together can usually create a new relationship, and the more relationships you create, the wider your network becomes. What do you get out of it? Sometimes the sheer joy of helping someone else be more successful or expand their network. More often than not, get one of those, not only great feelings, but they're thankful and appreciative, and not every time, but many times they remember that and turn around and figure out a way to what they think is repay you. They owed you nothing, but they want to do something for you, and that's very, very good. The other situation that occurs often, as I do a number of speeches around town and get a chance to meet a lot of folks, is I'll have someone either call me or link in and ask me to introduce them to someone in my network. At that point, I have to be a little blunt my relationship with my friends and contacts is very personal to me.
And it's treasured.
No question about it. I cannot afford to introduce someone that I don't know what they're going to talk about or whether they have a value service. If I were to introduce two or three people that really wouldn't be a benefit to someone I know, the next phone call is going to be unreturned or the next email will be unreturned. So it's very, very important. So at that point, I either...
You have to maintain your credibility.
No question. At that point, I either call and say, let's chat about it, or let's have a cup of coffee. I want to hear what you're going to talk about. And if I feel it's worthy of their time, then I'll make the introduction. If not, I'll say, I'm just not in a position to do that at this point.
Am I correct? Do I remember well that you have said that out of all of these introductions you've made, that even though you did it to help other people, you helped them get acquainted, hope that they could have a beneficial relationship themselves. Do I remember your saying that you've gotten as much as a third of your client referrals from situations like that because, as you say, the people were grateful?
No question. Again, back to you help someone else and they want to help you. They think about the time that you were kind. And then when they see a situation where you could be of value, they think of you first. They don't really think of others. I find many of those situations. I'm in a competitive business. I work for a great IT staffing firm called Hunter Technical Resources. Love these guys, and they do great work. But there's 328 IT staffing firms in Atlanta, maybe 400, Lord knows. We say we're different and unique, just like everybody else. But anyway, nonetheless, it's competitive. And so if I'm going against three or four companies, perhaps I can win, for a variety of reasons. But if I'm going against myself, it's pretty much a lock that I'm going to win. And And when someone introduces you for a soul source opportunity, it's just a, it's a great blessing and just warms your soul. And I've seen that happen time and time and time again.
We can't go this entire 60 minutes without talking about what to do at a networking situation, such as a business after hours reception. I happen to be going to one of them tonight, so I will benefit from your advice. In reading about your approach, yours is so different from the standard way somebody goes to a reception. Many of us will say, well, I got, let's see, this thing starts at 6. I'll be there by 6:30, and they'll give me a goes till 8, so I'll have plenty of time. Everybody will be there by then. I got a few things I want to tidy up at the office, another phone call or two to make. I can get more done with that 30 minutes. Ricky, this is the opposite of your approach. Astoundingly, you don't get there just when it starts. You get there before anybody else does. Why? What happens? What do you accomplish?
I want to be there, again, size up the room, but I've found by getting there early, sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes a half an hour, you're there when the meeting planners or the professional association directors are actually getting the rooms ready and preparing for the meeting. You know, very often I've had the opportunity of putting, information, brochures, the agenda on the seats around the room, perhaps at the tables.
So you help distribute the materials.
Help distribute the material. If you ever think that you're too good to do that, then perhaps you're just too good. And when you do that, again, it creates that relationship, that servant mentality. And I can't remember the last time I paid a late fee when I registered a day or two after the meeting started. Do I deserve it? No, but sometimes you can't argue with somebody that's trying to save you a few dollars. The other thing I like to do is, if it's possible, is alphabetize the name tags. If I can help them do that, I'm going to have a chance to study the names. Who are the people who are going to be there that night? Who do I not know that I'd like to meet? Who are the people that perhaps I want to avoid? And the people you want to avoid are not, it's not that they're not good people. It's not that they're not wonderful individuals. It's that they are time wasters. You ask them what time it is, and they tell you the history of Swiss watchmaking. You know, that's wonderful, and many times I'll say, you know, that's an interesting subject. Could we have a cup of coffee tomorrow and discuss that more fully? My boss is paying me to be there for a reason. It is critical if I'm going to be honorable and ethical to him or her that I'm there from start to finish for their purposes. They're paying for me to be here. They're paying me, you know, a salary. And so it's critical that I maintain their best interest in the situation. So getting there early, studying the name badges. I'm very, very fortunate. I have a photographic memory. Unfortunately, I forgot to buy film. And as a result, I'm very bad with names. And if I study the list, I will kind of have a sense of who's going to be there. So when I see someone, I say, hey, Bill, how you doing? And they'll say, gosh, you're great with names. They don't know I've been there a half hour studying the fact that they were going to be there. So it just gives you an advantage. The last thing.
Have you maybe jotted down on an index card some of those names you see that you want to be on the lookout for there?
Certainly. And many times I'll stand around registration because if I don't know them, I don't know what they look like perhaps. And I wait till they come up and say, you know, Harry Jones. And as they walk away, I say, Mr. Jones, I've always wanted to meet you. What you did a couple of years ago in the 90 Way campaign or something that's relevant to their lives starts a conversation and goes from there. A lot of associations will have a meeting before the meeting, whether it's their board of directors or a committee meeting. Sometimes it gets out a little bit early. Many times I have had 15 minutes with someone that's a rock star. When once the meeting starts, I can't even get close to them. You know, they've got 30 people around them and you can't fight the crowd. I've got them one-on-one for 15 minutes because I was there early. So again, that's three or four reasons, but again, you know, what's 15, 20 minutes if you're going to do it right? And it's been very beneficial to me.
Let's underscore one thing here, Ricky. Using a method like this, or using any method of meeting someone, conversing with them, following up with them, you can have the greatest system in the world, but it won't work unless you have a genuine interest and doing something for someone. It gets back to your philosophy, your servant livelihood philosophy, so that you're not there just to help yourself, but you're there with the hope that some of the people that you meet, you'll have an opportunity to assist.
Before I attend most any meeting, I'll try to find out who's going to be there, whether it's calling the association director and saying, you know, I'm Ricky Steele, if they haven't had an opportunity to meet them in the past. If you got a website or somewhere I could find kind of who's going to be there, and once I find that, I kind of see, you know, who they are, what company they're with, and if there's somebody I really want to meet a little bit more aggressively than someone else, I'll take time to study them. I'll look at their LinkedIn, their Plaxo. I'll Google them, finding out enough information so that I can be conversational. And if I happen to see there's somewhere that perhaps I have a connection that might be beneficial to them, I'll start the conversation. You know, Harry, it's great to meet you. Heard a lot about you. You know, do know that you are very connected with the Clemson Alumni Club. I know you meet at so-and-so hotel. I know some people at that hotel, and maybe I can get you a reduced rate. Maybe I can find you another hotel that would be a little less expensive. I know a couple of Clemson grads who are not members of your association. I would love to introduce them to you. You know, there's a thousand little things, again, that you can do for someone. And, again, it differentiates you from most other people who are throwing a business card in their face and say, can I get with you tonight? Can I get with you tonight? Can I get with you tonight? No one likes that.
Absolutely. Christina, talk to us, please, about our program next week.
Bill, first, let's remind listeners that they're tuned into the Communication Corner here on 89.1 WBCX. And next week's guest, Brett Broughton, will bring us fascinating information from his long career with the Department of Homeland Security. He'll talk about intellectual property protection, border patrol, U.S. customs, and so much more that impacts our national security. His topic is exceptionally timely now, and we're fortunate that he's going to be here to share his perspective on our nation's efforts to stay safe and reduce internal threats from international sources.
Yes, and Brett is no stranger to WBCX. He does some work for the station, doesn't he?
He does. He does all the editing and kind of the off-site production for one of our kids' shows on Saturday morning, Celebration Arts Alive, that airs at 8. Brett does all the technical work for that.
Thank you, Christina. Back to our guest, Ricky Steele. Ricky, when we're at an event, getting back to these networking events, you say that one thing we have to do is to be available. You say that when some people are with people, they're really not there with them at all. What is it you mean, and what are you recommending here?
Early in my career, I thought that the only reason Rome wasn't built in a day was because I wasn't the general contractor. I was going fast and furiously, and that's no way to create a relationship. When you're with someone, you have to be in the present. You have to be focused on them. And many times I'll be standing there talking to someone, and they're thinking about the next meeting or the last meeting or perhaps looking around the room to find someone more important. They're never going to be successful at this. You've got to be there. You've got to show empathy. You've got to be there for that person. It's not my job to tell them how great and wonderful I think that I am. It's my job to listen to them tell me how great and wonderful they think they are. And if you do that with the right empathy, you walk away and they say, there goes a great and wonderful person, because you gave them an opportunity to share what they wanted to share. So, again, two ears and one mouth, we should use them proportionately.
There's a friend of mine, Bill Marvin, who wrote a book about what it takes to be successful in the restaurant business. That's his specialty, is working with restaurants. He goes into a restaurant, and when he starts training the staff, he says to the wait staff, what percentage of tips are you getting now? And they'll say, well, sometimes 10%, maybe once in a while somebody will be generous and give us 15%. He said, well, how would you like to get 20% most of the time, and sometime even more than that? They said, of course we'd like it. What do we have to do? He looks at them and says, be present when you show up. Mm-hmm. Because we've all been in situations in a restaurant where the waiter or waitress gets there, and you can tell they're not listening to your order. Maybe they're thinking about another table they're serving. They're thinking about their dog being sick. They're thinking about, gosh, I had to work overtime tonight. They're not really focusing on you. You really set yourself apart at an event when, as you say, you're not looking over your shoulder to see who the next person is that you're going to see. I would imagine you've had the experience that I've had. I can remember so well going to a networking event in Atlanta. I met somebody, among a group of about five people. We talked for 3 or 4 minutes, and then one of the people in the group said to me, unbelievably, "Hi, I don't think we've met yet." And he introduced himself. At first, I thought he was kidding. Then I realized he was totally unaware of the fact that we had introduced ourselves, that we'd chatted for a minute. He was just absolutely not there. You must be what I think it's improv theater says. You've got to be in the moment.
No question. I have found out later in life that I'm both ADD, ADHD. Some of my friends tell me I have the attention span of a strobe light. Often I go to events, and if I don't have but 2 or 3 minutes, I'll do the same thing. There's a story in my book about meeting a venture capitalist who I did not know is from out of town at a meeting at John Yates' office, the premier IT attorney in the city of Atlanta at Morris, Manning & Martin. But anyway, I was in there and I met somebody, and then we walked around the room and they went one direction, I went to the other. I bumped into the guy at the other end of the table after 15 minutes and I said, "Hi, I'm Ricky Steele." He said, "Yeah, we just met on the other end of the table." I said, "Well, yes, I know that, but I wanted to make sure you remembered who I was." He knew I was lying, and,
one of life's embarrassing moments.
Oh, I had to, you know, kind of beg some forgiveness and, send him a note afterwards, but it can happen. Again, being in the present is critical, and focusing on what that person is all about.
You're legendary in Georgia and the Southeast and beyond for your networking skills. A lot of it revolves around the way you make maximum use of mealtime. There's a book out that I've read, Never Eat Alone, and that seems to be your philosophy. I've read about you're spending almost all day at a restaurant with one meal client after another. Tell us why breaking bread together is such a great networking opportunity, and how do you make the most of that?
Well, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, we celebrated the holidays. And I don't care whose house you went to, what party you were in, and if it was in a home, they could have the biggest screen television, gardens, food and beverage everywhere. 75% of the people end up in the kitchen. The kitchen is where hospitality begins. It's where love is created. It's where warmth is created. Meals are a place that where you can have real conversation, and so I'm a big proponent of that.
And this has been true historically.
No question. I think my record is the OK Cafe. I sat down at 6 o'clock one morning and left at 3 o'clock after 8 back-to-back-to-backs. And
now, were you eating all of those times?
Look at my size, and you can figure that out. You have breakfast with one, and you have coffee with another, and, you know, eventually you get to lunch, and 2 o'clock you have a dessert. But, it's being there for that individual, and the interesting thing is if you go to one place often enough, you create relationships with the manager, with the cashiers, with the customer service, the waitresses, whatever the case might be. And I had a program for many, many years there, and it's still in place after 12, 15 years. When I'm at the OK Cafe, the waitress knows that I'm probably going to have 2, maybe 3 breakfast meetings. As soon as the first meeting's over with, I walk out to the front to say goodbye and walk the person to the door. They immediately clean the table and reset it so that I wait 2 minutes or whatever. The next person comes in, I walk them back, and they really believe that's the first person that I've seen all day long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to deceive them, but I want them to feel special as well. And we sit down, go through the same situation, and then, you know, sometimes one will come, you know, early, and they'll say, "Gosh, you're meeting with somebody else." I said, "Yeah, I just want to make the most of today." And it's a good, I've done a lot of 11:30 and 1 o'clock lunches again in the same restaurant. We only have a certain number of days on this earth and, certain number of times to work. I love working. I love what I do for a living. And as a result, I want to get as much of it in, you know, as possible. The only place that success comes before work is in the dictionary. So if you're not out there doing it, the chance of success are going to be, you know, pretty tiny.
Ricky, I answered a survey recently. The survey question was, what is your favorite office away from your office? And as I read the results of the survey, there were a number of people who answered it online. Practically everybody's favorite place for their office away from the office was a restaurant someplace or a coffee shop. Now, this especially fits the solo practitioner, the entrepreneur, who may not even have an office anyplace. It has become more and more accepted and maybe even expected. If you want to have an initial meeting with somebody, you say, let's meet for coffee or let's meet for breakfast. You find out what that person's preference is. Some people are not, as they would put it, morning people. They don't want to meet you for breakfast, but they'll meet you for lunch or maybe for a beverage after hours. You have to meet what that person's preference is. I agree wholeheartedly that having one place that you go where the people know you, you're bringing in a lot of business for that restaurant. Naturally, they're going to be exceptionally gracious to you over somebody else who just happens to stumble in there. As our time's fleeting away, I know that a person like you, you don't get to that level without learning a lot from the ideas of others. We've only got 3 or 4 minutes. What are some of the favorite books that you like and that you recommend?
Well, the easy one you say is the Bible, because it's a great answer for any question. But, earlier in life, I enjoyed To Kill a Mockingbird because I thought it was a great study on racism in America, and especially the South. But today, one of my favorite books is called Love is the Killer App by Tim Sanders. You know, in technology, we're all looking for the next application, the next Yahoo, the next Google, whatever it is. He truly believes love is the killer app, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. Another book I like a lot is Crushed by Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary was in town yesterday speaking at a conference, a Digital South, or Digital Media. Social Media 101, Chris Brogan is a great book. Anything by Seth Godin or Malcolm Gladwell, whether it's Lynchpin and Tribes from Godin or Blink and Outliers from Gladwell. These are all books that will stimulate you, motivate you, and let you look at things in a little different way. I just don't believe you can ever learn enough. I tell people, if you ever believe that you know all there is to know, have a friend or a spouse or someone call the local funeral home. Have them pick you up. You're
time
dead.
To go. Time
you're
to
dead.
Go.
You just don't know it yet.
You're toast.
No question.
That's right. Well, I've heard the saying before that several years from now, one of the big changes in your life will come from the books that you have read, and those are wonderful ones that you have recommended for us. Let me ask, you mentioned the social media very quickly in a minute or two. What do you have in the way of recommendations for what we should be doing with the social media? And that's one of the reasons that your book was went into a second edition, so you could talk about the social media. Just off the top, a couple of tips there, please, Ricky.
Well, as someone that's networked all of his life, it's important to be together. But when you socially network, instead of talking to 3 or 5 people, you can talk to 3 or 5,000 or 30,000. So it's been a game changer. Do I think social networking will ever replace traditional networking? No, I think it enhances it. If I say this in every meeting I speak, if you're not on LinkedIn today as a business person, get up right now, go to your office and get on it, because that's going to be better than anything I'm going to say. So LinkedIn is a critical, part of my life. The things I've learned on LinkedIn, the connections I've made, the things that I've learned about someone's background, what college they went to, what groups they belong to, is just invaluable. You know, Facebook was always seen as a kid's toy or college or what have you. Now there's over, I believe it's close to 500,000 businesses that now have Facebook page. Facebook is a business tool as well as a fun tool for teenagers or college students.
MySpace has pretty well disappeared.
Pretty much, maybe for the younger generation, but I had a MySpace page 10 years ago, but I don't have one any longer.
Ricky, I have admired you from a distance. I have looked forward to this opportunity. And one of the great things talking about networking, Christina and I are going to host you for coffee afterwards, so we'll get to know you even better that way. Been wonderful to have Ricky Steele here in the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, on WBCX 89.1 FM, working alongside Christina Rhodes today. Again, Ricky Steele, thank you so much for being with us. Please be with us next Tuesday when I will be talking with Brett Broughton about international security, customs, and so many other critical issues. Again, please be sure to visit my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. Call me, 678-316-4300. The station number, 770-538-4744.